It's Saturday, the 19th of December, 2015. Happy birthday to Mo Williams. Hello and welcome to the Red Rock Fantasy Basketball Monster Podcast, brought to you by Moneyball.com.au and Juiceman829. I think it's Juiceman. It's spelt without an E, but I'm going to go with Juiceman anyway. My name is Josh Lloyd, and you can follow me on Twitter at redrock_bball, and you can be a sponsor of the podcast for just one day. All you need to do is leave a review on iTunes, and you can be like Juiceman without an E. Very, very straightforward. Coming to you once again from a sweltering Melbourne, Australia. It is exceptionally hot. So again, if I appear delirious, if I appear delusional, if I'm breaking out in a sweat, it's not nerves, it's not panic. It's just that it's absolutely on fire here at the moment. And I don't actually mean that literally where I am, but there are some areas around Melbourne where there are fires happening. So if you are in one of those zones, I hope you're safe and I hope everything is going well, but it is absolutely scorching hot here at the moment. Enough about that. Let's talk basketball.
Let's get to it.
Thank you. The monstrous line of the night. I had a few people tweeting at me today saying, are you going to have a hard choice for the monstrous line of the night? And yes, it wasn't all that easy. But I'm heading to Chicago for the quadruple overtime victory from the Detroit Pistons and Andre Drummond, who played 54 minutes. He went 33-21, the NBA's first 30-20 game this season. He also chimed in 3 assists, he had 3 steals, and he had 2 blocks. He turned the ball over just twice, and he was 14-25 from the field. Yes, he was 5-10 from the free throw line. You know what I'm going to say? Who cares? It doesn't matter, because you drafted Andre Drummond knowing that was the case. It's not like he took 16, 30 free throws or anything like that. He took 10. That's about what you sort of, a little bit elevated. It's what you expect. Everything else was absolutely phenomenal from Drummond. And when we talked about him on yesterday's podcast from a DFS perspective, said, yeah, he's got a really great matchup going up against Chicago. They allow a ton of fantasy points to opposition centers. Didn't anticipate he was going to be playing basically an extra 20 minutes of action to put up these sort of lines. But if you use these Pistons guys or Bulls guys in DFS, I'm sure your lineup looked pretty tasty. And Drummond's been a top 10 player this year in head-to-head leagues. We know that he's way down in Roto because of the impact he has on your free throws, but in head-to-head leagues, he's been absolutely superb this season, just putting up exactly what you want him to do: 18 and 16 and a half, 2 steals and 1.5 blocks. He's clearly leading the league in rebounds. He's also 7th in the league in steals, which for a center is great. You expect those. That's what you get point guards for. But you got Drummond. You're getting that from your center, and that's obviously a huge help. The waiver wire line of the night. This guy is so, I don't know what the word is, intriguing, frustrating. Dennis Schroeder of the Atlanta Hawks. He played 28 minutes here, had 22 points, hit a couple of threes, 5 assists, 4 steals on a really efficient 8 of 15. And that marks 3 really good games in a row for Schroeder. In fact, over his last 4, he's at 14.5 and 6.5 assists with 3 steals a game almost and 1.5 threes. But the extra playing time that he's getting is, there's reasons for it. There was a blowout victory. There was Jeff Teague foul trouble. Jeff Teague tweaked his ankle in this game and was limited to very few minutes. And we know that when Schroeder becomes a starter, or if he becomes a starter, he's going to be a must-own player. But when Schroeder goes back to playing 31, 32 minutes, Schroeder's not going to play big minutes. We haven't seen him play 25 minutes regularly. We saw a couple of times when Kyle Korver was out earlier on. But before these last 3 games where he's been over 20 minutes, he hadn't played 20 minutes since the 18th of November. So basically a month where he hadn't played 20 minutes in a game. And yes, his upside is fantastic. We know that. But without a real clear path for him to get 25 plus minutes, I don't see how you can own him in standard leagues. Jeff Teague's ankle injury is not going to be serious. It doesn't look like it's going to keep him out maybe a game. So you can definitely stream Schroeder in that situation. And maybe a trade happens with Teague. Maybe. There's a possibility that that happens. But I'm definitely not holding my breath, and I'm definitely not going out there and going, I must hold Schroeder for the rest of this season. We're going to talk about that that sort of concept a little bit more later in the show, but I'm not going out there and going, oh, I must own Teague. We all know his tremendous ability. He's had 11 steals in his last three games. He's had 19 assists in his last three games. These are big numbers, 6 3-pointers, like huge, huge numbers. But the playing time just is not consistent enough for him to be recognized as a guy who is a must-own in standard leagues. It's just not the case at this point, unless something changes that makes that happen. And at this point, we have no indication that that's going to be the case at all. The young gun of the night. About time this guy got some recognition. I know I hate on him a lot, but Andrew Wiggins turned in definitely his best performance of the season. 36 minutes for Wiggins, just the third double-double of his career. 32, 10, and 6. No steals and no blocks, which is still a little bit disappointing. He hit a three, but even better, he went 11 of 20 from the field, and he went 9 of 10 from the free throw line. I've harped on about Wiggins this year and saying, yes, that the points are great from him, but everything else he's doing renders him as an outside the top 100 player, because he gives you, not enough threes, rebounds, assists, steals, blocks, and below average percentages. Like, just does nothing positive apart from one category. So tonight was a great result for Andrew Wiggins owners and for Andrew Wiggins fans. I don't see it necessarily as like, oh, he's turned the corner, he's going to be this guy, because what's he done for the previous 24 games this year? That's just not who he is. And maybe it will become more regular for him as the season wears on. But I don't see any path for him to be a top 50 player for the rest of the season here. Yeah, he could easily be a top 100 player. I don't think there's any concern about that as those numbers do start to increase. But he just doesn't strike me as that guy who's going to be a top 50 guy in the next year or two. The dud of the night. This guy's been really good. I think he's had a couple of stinkers lately. Avery Bradley struggled. He played 35 minutes here, just 4 points. One rebound, one assist, and one steal on 2 of 8 shooting. So not a great night from Bradley. He was red hot, clearly, over the last few weeks, but has cooled. The last 2 weeks, he's only seen him at 13.4 points, which is 2 points a game less than his season high, or his season average. His steals have dropped. His shooting's gone from 45 to 41%, and that's making a big dent in his production as well. He's still giving you over 2 threes a game. He's still at close to 1.5 steals. He's still a 2-assist-a-game guy, so there's still a little bit to like with him, but the drop-off has come as the shooting has cooled off, and we didn't think he was going to be able to sustain that 45, 46% shooting that he was doing. He's more of a 43% sort of player, so that is where it was going to cause him to cool off. I've got no qualms with owning Avery Bradley. Maybe when Marcus Smart returns in the next week or two, then Avery Bradley becomes someone who gets on the chopping block if he's owned on a really strong team, but it's not going to be a wholesale drop, I wouldn't have thought, and I'm definitely not preparing for that to be the case by thinking, oh yeah, let's preemptively drop Avery Bradley because when Marcus Smart comes, he's going to have all his value evaporate. I don't think it's going to be anything like that sort of situation. The daily fantasy value play of the day is Chandler Parsons, and this is exactly what Chandler Parsons season-long owners have been waiting to see. He played 32 minutes off the bench. He was priced at just $4,000 and put up 34.9 points, 16, 7, and 7, 2 threes and a steal. He said that January was the time when the restrictions were going to be lifted. We're less than 2 weeks away from January. He played 32 minutes off the bench and 16, 7, and 7, and actually went 4 of 5 from the free throw line. So things could be starting to turn. He has legit top 50 potential, this guy. If for some reason he's floating on your waiver wire, which he probably isn't, but there's a definite possibility, you have to add him. There's no two ways about it. But I don't think that's going to be really a realistic situation. Maybe in a 10-team league, but he's ramping things up and starting to look really good. There's going to be some stinkers still mixed in here before things really start to get going, but massively positive signs for Chandler Parsons, especially considering he was coming off a knee issue in the last game where he had to leave the game and was having treatment on his knee. Good to see he came back and went, bang, he's 32 minutes and he's a big performance. That's definitely what we like seeing. All right, that is it for the nightly awards. Now we need to have a look at these 12 games in a little bit more detail as we go into the box scores and see what we can bring out of that. Bring that up on the video screen for you guys watching along on YouTube. And if you don't watch along on YouTube, I do encourage you, even if you're not going to watch it on a regular basis, just go and subscribe on YouTube. Get the YouTube subscriber numbers up. It's been a great response over there. Really appreciated that. So if you have a sec, go ahead and subscribe on YouTube. It would it does help. It adds to all the listens and download numbers and all that sort of stuff that happens when we're attracting new sponsors, which hopefully we'll have a few of those, a few new supporters of the podcast coming on board soon. All right, the first game we look at, the Portland Trail Blazers and the Orlando Magic. For the Blazers, it was CJ McCollum again, 27 points with 3 threes, 6 assists and 2 steals. He continues to play extremely well. Damian Lillard, 19 points and 10 assists. Not his greatest night going, just 4 of 15, but we know that these are the two guys that carry this team. Alan Crabb, back on track after a bit of a quiet night the other day. 24 minutes only, but 14 points with 2 threes and 4 rebounds. I don't think that he's a must-own player in 12-team leagues. I think his biggest standard league impact at the moment is the impact he's having on Myers Leonard, but he's not a bad stream option for threes and points. That's probably about where it ends for him. As for Leonard, he played 22 minutes off the bench, 4 points, 7 rebounds. Very hard to justify continuing to own him in a 12-team league. Ed Davis has fallen off as well lately. 22 minutes for him, 1 point and 7 rebounds. Crabb is also affecting some of his play. So I'm not all that excited about Ed Davis in a standard league, whereas Mason Plumlee got 30 minutes, so he did foul out, but good to see him getting those minutes. Just 4 points, but 10 rebounds and a block. He's the guy that has to be owned. Out of him, Leonard and Davis, Mason Plumlee's the guy that you do need to own in pretty much all leagues. Onto the Magic, we saw the starters play big minutes, which is great. Toby Harris got 25 and 12 with 3 steals in his 36. Victor Oladipo played 35 off the bench, which is awesome. 15, 4, and 6 with 3 steals and a block. You love that. They're great numbers. Nick Vucevic went 35 minutes, 25 and 11 with a steal and 2 blocks. Lord Alfred Payton played 36 and went 19 and 6 with 2 steals and a block. These are great numbers, and this is awesome. But you know, Scott Skiles is just as likely to play them 27 minutes each in the next game if the Magic get up big early or get down big early. The guy who is struggling is Evan Fournier, who played just 25 minutes here. 2 points, 4 assists, and 2 steals. So 4 assists and 2 steals you're still relatively happy with, but he's been trending down for the last couple of weeks, and I'm okay with moving on from him. Skiles is not featuring him as much in the offense, especially since the move of Victor Oladipo to the bench is limiting what Fournier's been able to do as he's moved down from small forward to shooting guard. He just has not been as effective, which is weird because he is more of a guard than a forward, but he hasn't been as effective in this role, and if there's someone else out there you want to go and grab, I'm okay with dropping Fournier, definitely. Channing Frye, after 2 strong games, stunk. 2 points and 4 rebounds in his 23 minutes, and not much else to really to go on about with the Magic, I wouldn't have thought. The Brooklyn Nets and the Indiana Pacers. Jarrett Jack, what's going on? When Jarrett Jack goes 26, 9 and 6, he hits 3 threes, he had 3 steals and 2 blocks on 8 of 15 shooting. He was second in line for the monstrous line of the night tonight. It's incredible for Jarrett Jack, really, and he's really benefiting from Shane Larkin's absence. And it's something that you can sort of predict because Donald Sloan's trash, even though he played 24 minutes here. Jack got the big minutes and he's putting up big numbers, and he's owned in 78% of leagues. That number is way too low. He has to be owned in 85 plus. I don't know why he's not owned in every league, even with Larkin nipping at his heels before. Jarrett Jack needs to be owned in everywhere, unless there's just 22% of people playing 16 leagues. He has to be owned. As unappealing as it is to say, I own Jarrett Jack, you have to do it. Thad Young went 14 and 14 in his 33 minutes with a steal and a block, while Joe Johnson had not a bad game. 11 points, including 3 threes with 3 assists and 3 steals. He's still not a must-own guy, though. Brook Lopez, 18 and 5, and that's okay, but he's really not putting up the monster numbers he was to end last season. And Bojan Bogdanović really struggling. 31 minutes for him in the start. 5 points with a 3 and 2 assists. He showed tremendous potential at the end of last season, but he's getting the minutes now with Hollis Jefferson and Shane Larkin out, and he's not benefiting. He's not taking advantage. He's not capitalizing. And I don't think that he's worthy of a roster spot in a 12-team league. Onto the Pacers. This was Paul George, probably his best game for December. 23 and 10 with a couple of threes and a steal. A nice night there. CJ Miles still continuing to play well. 15 points with a couple of threes, a steal, and 2 blocks in just 27 minutes. And Yan Mahinmi got some decent numbers happening again after a little bit of a slump. 10 and 9 with a block in his 25 minutes. He's someone that I still think should be owned in most standard leagues, assuming he fits what your build does. Jordan Hill, another double-double. He's actually a top 100 player over the last month because he's shooting at like a 56% field goal percentage mark and a pretty decent free throw percentage mark for a guy of his size. And then he's also adding some nice rebounds. don't think they want to own him in all 12-team leagues, but in certain situations, in certain team builds, you can stream Jordan Hill in, or if you're in a spot where you just need to get that fewer goal percentage and rebounds, he can be a guy because he's going to get minutes in those low 20s. He's going to rebound the ball aggressively. And this is probably his role in the NBA, an energy guy who plays that 20 minutes, the first big off the bench, who goes out there and grabs boards and dunks. And that's basically what he does. Monte Ellis played through his knee issue, but shouldn't have really. 2 points, one rebound, five assists, and two steals, while Rod Stuckey went 15-7. And George Hill had 9 points on 11 shots, and all of those were three-pointers. So he missed all the rest of his shots. The other four, all his 4 2-point attempts he missed, and he is really struggling at the moment. He's a buy-low opportunity, I think, but you have to buy pretty low because he is really struggling, but people don't have a huge amount of faith in George Hill. So I reckon you can buy pretty low, and I think it should turn out okay for you. The New York Knicks and the Philadelphia 76ers. My boy, Aaron Aflalo, 26 minutes for Aflalo. 22 points on 9 of 13 shooting, including 3 threes and 7 rebounds. Now, let's talk a bit about Aflalo. Now, he probably has to be owned in 12-team leagues, if I'm being honest. But it's because he's shooting at a ridiculous rate. His last 2 weeks, he's at 52% from the field. He's at 61 in his last three games. And it's making his numbers look fantastic. In his last three, he's averaging 22 points and 2.7 threes. And that's inflating his rank to be a top 30 guy over that last week. But if his 61% shooting from the field drops down to the 43%, well, there goes his threes, there goes his scoring, and you're left with piss-poor rebounds, assists, steals, and blocks. And good free throw percentage, yes, I'll give him that. But he doesn't do it in the other areas. His value is completely buoyed by an unsustainable field goal percentage at the moment. So while he's hot, and it's happened the last month, he's shooting pretty well, 51% over his last 15 games. And that's awesome. But is he really a 50-plus percent shooter? I don't think he is. I don't think he's anywhere close to that. And he doesn't give you enough in the other areas for me to think that this is going to be sustainable. Yeah, own him for sure. Like, you get the scoring, you get that field goal boost, you get some free throws, you get three-pointers. There's value there. But it's very tenuous to me. And it's not that I hate Aaron Aflalo. I don't really hate any of these players. I look at it and go, this is the value. Not much comes of it. Now, he was good here. A steal, a block, three threes, that's really good. It's just not the usual. Kristaps Porzingis, 8-4 in 26 minutes with 3 blocks. Definitely not his best night, but this was against the Sixers. The Knicks had it in hand. Guys were spreading the minutes out all over the place. Jose Calderon, one point. 5 rebounds and 6 assists is still decent, though. And 24 minutes, no one is really going to take his minutes away from him. I wouldn't be too concerned about this. And again, you look at the game. Derek Williams played 22 minutes and scored 17 points. Yep, it was the Sixers. And Kylo Quinn showed us again that how intriguing he would be if he got big minutes. 10-7-5 in 21 in this game. Good to see Jerry and Grant getting 22 minutes. Bad to see him not doing anything with them, though. On to the Sixers. Nerlens Noel returned. And we're getting more of a glimpse of last season's Nerlens Noel. 8-5 is not all that impressive. But 3 blocks, hit all 4 of his field goals. The numbers are slowly coming back there. He still should be owned in all standard leagues because his upside is his top 30 upside. But he definitely hasn't been that guy this year. Jahlil Okafor went 20-5 in his 30 minutes. Isaiah Cannon played another 29 minutes and went 14 points with 2 threes and 3 assists. He's really just a 3-point guy at this point. What about the rest of the point guards? Kendall Marshall started, played 16 minutes. 2 points, 3 assists and 2 steals. No thank you. TJ McConnell played 14 minutes and went 5-5-3. Nope. Tony Roten played 23 minutes, had 15 points, 3 rebounds, 3 assists, and a steal, and surprisingly went 5 of 10 from the field. Now, he's boasting some ridiculous usage rate of about 38%. I think he's third in the NBA in usage, which for a guy as shit as he is, should not be the case. 5 of 8 from the free throw line and 7 turnovers in his 23 minutes. This is Tony Roten. Points leagues, guys, knock yourself out, but I don't see him getting enough minutes to be relevant in most situations. Yeah, he played 23 here, but is it really enough? Is he going to get 23 moving forward? I know there's a lot more Tony Roten supporters out there than I feel there should be, but there is. He's just not a good basketball. And at some point, his lack of basketball skill is going to come back to limit his minutes. Maybe it won't on this team because there's not a massive amount of skill here, but I think that Marshall should be the guy getting 24 minutes, and Roten can play 16 minutes. And that's not going to be enough, but I understand adding him in certain spots. The percentages, in roto, it's going to kill you. In nine cat roto, he's not a chance. You can't deal with him. He's Emmanuel Mudiay, basically, but worse. In head to heads, if you're not punting the categories that he's going to affect you in, because if he gets 30 minutes, that means his counting stats will be great, but he's going to kill those other categories. So you really need to make sure you're built correctly for Tony Roten. Jeremy Grant played 27 minutes back in the bench role, 8 points, a steal and a block. He's not a standard league guy anymore, I don't think, if he's going to be playing that role. And Bob Cove played just 16 minutes here. Foul trouble was the culprit. 4 fouls in that time, 3 points with 4 rebounds and an assist. Let's just chalk that one up to an off night, and he'll be back, hopefully better than ever, for the next game. The Atlanta Hawks and the Boston Celtics. Dennis Schroeder, we talked about already. Al Horford was big, 21-10 with a steal and 3 blocks. Paul Millsap, 28-4 with 2 steals. A good night from him. And Thabo Sefolosha really played well off the bench. 11-8 with a 3-on-5-of-7 shooting. He still only played 19 minutes though, so I don't think that he's worth looking at in a 12-team league. And Kent Bazemore got 37 points. Now, this is the Kent Bazemore that we used to know and love. 6 of 16 from the field and 3 of 5 from the free throw line. That's the thing that I was concerned about with him, that is it all going to regress to that level? Because that's who he's been throughout his career, and it hasn't happened this year. Still had 15 points, 3 rebounds, 2 assists, and a steal, but I'm worried that those percentages will end up dragging him down. For now, he's clearly a guy that you have to own. Kyle Korver went 11-5 with 2 assists and 2 steals as well. Onto the Celtics, Isaiah Thomas is just red hot. 29 points, 6 assists, 2 steals, 14 of 15 from the free throw line. Just fantastic. Been one of the surprises of the season for me. And Jay Crowder had a career high, 24 points with 3 threes and 10 rebounds. It's a career high, 24 points, therefore do not expect it to happen all that often. Kelly Olynyk has been Brad Stevens pretty aggressively lately. 15 minutes for him, 8 points, 2 rebounds, and a 3 and an assist. You know I love him. You know I love what he can do, but this is always the concern, that he's just not going to get enough minutes for us to go, yeah, must own. And he was must own when he was playing 23 minutes, 24, because the upside was there. But Stevens has gone, you know what, he's played well, let's not play him. Of course, let's get Jonas Jerebko for 16 minutes and David Lee for 18 minutes. Just get Kelly Olynyk out there. Now, he was bothered by foul trouble in this one. 4 fouls in 15 minutes, and that is a concern with him. He does get fouled. No, he does rack up fouls very, very quickly. But still, I would have liked to see him out there more, even though the fouls had racked up early. You can probably move on to someone else, because this is about 3 or 4 games in a row where he's been sub-20 minutes, but he's always someone you really want to keep an eye on. RJ Hunter had probably his best game for the Celtics, played 18 minutes and had 8 points with a couple of threes, but that's not something to get all that excited about with Thomas, with Bradley, with Smart, with Evan Turner all around still. Jared Salinger had 10-8 in his 24 minutes as well. The Toronto Raptors and the Miami Heat up next. The Raptors made a change to their starting lineup. They put James Johnson as the starting small forward and moved Terrence Ross to the bench. But Ross had probably his best game off the bench. 17 points, including 5 triples, a steal, and 2 blocks. While James Johnson was also good. 13 points, 5 assists, and a triple one. Now, the thing is, with both of these guys, Damari Carroll looks like he'll be back within about a week. And it's going to render both of these performances moot. Like, it's not going to matter. If you want some defensive numbers, and you want 2 games out of him, Johnson's the guy. Some steals and some threes, Ross is the guy, but by no means are the guys that you have to go and look at adding. Kyle Lowry went 21-3-4 with 4 steals, while DeMar DeRozan had 30 points, 4 rebounds, 4 assists, and 2 steals, and clearly they're just carrying this team. And Luis Scola, 20 points in 27 minutes, very impossible, almost impossible to predict when he's going to have a big game, but it does happen occasionally. And Bismack Biyombo did a Bismack Biyombo thing, had 15 rebounds and 1 block with 5 points. And Jonas Valanciunas is also very close to returning. So Biyombo's been decent for those numbers, for the rebounds and the blocks. But Valanciunas is coming back, so his value is very, very limited. Now, with Terrence Ross and with James Johnson playing big minutes, Corey Joseph played just 20 and was scoreless. 0.3 rebounds, 2 assists, and 2 steals. Even though his minutes have been up lately, his production has been terrible, so I'm okay with moving on from him. Onto the Heat, Hassan Whiteside played 31 minutes. That's probably the biggest thing from his stat line. 8 points, 13 rebounds, and 5 blocks. Gerald Green hit another 5 threes for 20 points in 31 minutes. He's consistently getting these 30 minutes with Tyler Johnson out, but when Johnson returns, he has to go back to around 20. So he gives you very empty stat lines. Points and threes is where it's at for him, and it's going to be reduced coming up pretty soon, I would imagine. Dwayne Wade had 21, 6, and 5, and 8 turnovers, and Goran Dragic is definitely improving. 18, 2, and 5 with a steal. So anyone who bought really low on Dragic, and by low I mean the worst player on your roster, you'd be pretty happy with the way he's turning things around at the moment. Little old Deng's streak of big games wasn't able to continue. He still played 34 minutes, but had 9 points with a couple of threes, three rebounds, and two assists. Definitely not the sort of production he'd been showing before that. And Justice Winslow, he's just not a good fantasy player. 18 minutes for him, 2 points, and two rebounds. The next game was the quadruple overtime classic between the Pistons and the Bulls. There's just big numbers and big lines everywhere here. Reggie Jackson went 31, 6, and 13. Marcus Morris went 20 and 7 with three threes. Stanley Johnson played 30 minutes and went 16 and 7 with a three and a steal. KCP went 17 and 7 with two threes, a steal, and a block. And Ersan Ilyasova, probably the most intriguing one to me, played 54 minutes, 18 points, 9 rebounds, 4 assists, and a 3. Now, he's a guy that I've spoken about on this podcast a lot because I do love his upside. And the fact that he played 54 minutes here and Anthony Tolliver played just 13 speaks volumes for the way that Stan Van Gundy is currently feeling. Now, earlier in the season, Van Gundy said, "We're limiting his minutes because of Eurobasket," and people went, "Come on, Stan, let's be serious here. You're limiting him because he's shit." Doesn't appear to be the case. They were limiting him because of Eurobasket. His minutes have been steadily rising. He's getting at 27-28 most nights, unless there's a horrible defensive matchup for him. He played 54 here. He's someone you have to look at in 12-team leagues. Not saying he's a must-own guy, and his rebounding numbers are never going to approach career numbers playing next to Andre Drummond, who's just gobbling up everything. But he can score. He can grab some boards. He can block some shots. He can hit some threes. He has enough value where we can look at him in 12-team leagues and go, yeah, I can see him being on my team. The rest of these guys, we know what's up with them. KCP, Marcus Morris, they obviously need to be owned. Stanley Johnson, someone to watch, but it's unlikely that he approaches 30 minutes unless there's another quadruple overtime game coming up pretty soon. Onto the Bulls. This is going to be really interesting for the Bulls, and we'll talk about it in the daily fantasy section later on. But they have to play again on Saturday. They have to play. And so many of the guys played big minutes. Jimmy Butler played 56 minutes and went 43-8 with two steals and two blocks. Pau Gasol played 48 minutes and went 30-15 with five blocks and five assists. Derrick Rose played 54 minutes and went 34-4-8. Taj Gibson played 44 minutes and went 14-12 with two blocks. Tony Snell got 38 minutes. And they've got to back it up and play again. The thing that irritates me here is that Nikola Mirotic played just 24 minutes and Doug McDermott played just 22 minutes. Why are you playing these guys like Gibson and like Snell such big minutes when, to me, there are more superior options on the bench? I know there's defensive liabilities there, definitely, but now you've got to go out and play a back-to-back, and you've got Rose playing 54, and Gasol might not even be able to suit up because he's just played 48 minutes and he's 48 years old. It's going to be real interesting for Chicago for DFS. I think you'll see minutes restrictions for Butler. Not restrictions. He won't play his 38 in tomorrow's game. Rose will probably come down to the 20s. Gasol might not play. So we might see a big night from Mirotic. We might see him up to 30 minutes, maybe. This is all speculation on my part. He might get big minutes. McDermott might be at 30. We might see Etuan Moore play 12 minutes and Kirk Heinrich play 20 minutes. Things could be definitely changed with the Bulls tomorrow. So it's something to pay attention to. As for Mirotic, if you own him, let's just wait and see what happens tomorrow. But he's clearly out of favor in Hoiberg's rotation. The upside is immense, but unless you're sitting comfortably at the top of the standings, you might need to move on and get someone else into that position. And then if you miss out later in the season, oh well, then it's bad luck, I guess. The Los Angeles Clippers and the San Antonio Spurs. Chris Paul was good, 27, 10 assists, 3 steals, and Blake Griffin went 25, 5, and 5. We know these guys are good. The problem is that there's other guys in this team who are terrible. JJ Redick had 14 points and 3 threes, so there's use in that. And DeAndre Jordan had 16 and 17 with 2 blocks. He also went 8 of 20 from the free throw line, and it made the game farcical. I know everyone says hit the free throws, but I just don't care. It's just so frustrating to watch. It is horrible. Jamal Crawford, if anyone's owning him in a 12-team league, you don't need to do that. 17 minutes for him, 0 points. And his minutes and his role is greatly reduced when Redick and Paul play. Now, if one of those guys sits, Crawford is going to get a bigger chunk of playing time. But for now, forget about it. The small forward melange of crapness continued. Luke Marmute played 22 minutes. Josh Smith at 12. Wes Johnson at 15. Lance Stevenson at 10. There is nothing to like in that situation at all. Or Paul Pierce also had 8 minutes. Yuck. Onto the Spurs, Tony Parker went 21 points with 3 assists. LaMarcus Aldridge went 26 and 13, while Kawhi Leonard went 19 and 9. And Danny Green, we saw signs of life from Danny Green. He only played 25 minutes, but 10 points, 2 threes, 2 blocks. And he had those 10 points at halftime, so obviously struggled to kick on in the second half. But the 2 blocks and 2 threes is exactly what you want from him and exactly what we know he can deliver. Still not thinking that it's the problem solved or anything like that, but there's been more glimmers of hope lately that makes me think, yeah, maybe things are working out for Danny Green, and maybe we start considering it, that he's on the way back. I'm not quite at that point just yet. Patty Mills chimed in with 8 points off the bench for the Spurs. Sacramento Kings and the Minnesota Timberwolves. Rajon Rondo returned from his one-game suspension straight into the starting lineup. Played 36 minutes, even though he had to get stitches in a cut above his eye. 11 points, 4 rebounds, 13 assists, and 3 steals. That's very Rajon Rondo-ish. And DeMarcus Cousins went 21, 11, and 4 with 4 steals and a block. So a big night from Boogie. Rudy Gay was good, 20 points. Omri Caspi had 3 threes for 11 points and a steal. And both, obviously Gay's a must-own, but I think that Caspi's a must-own as well. And Ben McLemore had 6 points in his 21 minutes. He's just not getting a consistent enough role for us to rely upon. Darren Collison moved back to the bench. Had 15 points and 2 threes on 6 of 10 shooting. And you know my love for Darren Collison. But if he's only getting mid to high 20s in minutes, it's very hard to hold on to in a 12-team league. On to the Timberwolves. They got the win, so they'd be happy with that. I just don't like what happened with the rotation. Kevin Martin returned from his wrist injury, and he played 16 minutes, and that's great, because we don't want Kevin Martin playing 30 minutes. We want to develop these young talent players and let them do their thing, and that's fine. Martin played 16 minutes, had 2 points. The problem is, the 16 minutes came at the expense of Zach LaVine, who played just 18 minutes and had 8 points and 2 rebounds, because Tayshaun Prince still got his 21, and Kevin Garnett played 21 minutes as well. If you own LaVine, you hold on, but if this new starting lineup of Prince starting means that LaVine and Martin then share all the backup minutes instead of Prince getting his 8 or 10 minutes, then you know, in 18 to 19 minutes, LaVine's not going to be worth it. Gorgui Dieng played 29 minutes, so that's encouraging, even with Garnett back, but Karl Anthony Towns was limited to 24 minutes with foul trouble, 15 and 8 for him, and Dieng had 4, 11 and 5 with a block. You're obviously still owning Dieng, but we need to see what happens when Towns plays 30 minutes. Does Dieng still play 29 if Garnett's there? That's what we need to see how that plays out moving forward. Nemanja Bjelica was down to 4 minutes in this one. He has really just lost the plot completely. No idea what he's doing at the moment, and it's really weird after that knee injury, and he was playing quite well. Ricky Rubio got close to another triple-double, 12, 7, and 8 with 2 threes and 2 steals. Not a bad night from him. The Memphis Grizzlies and the Dallas Mavericks. Matt Barnes, after a bit of a quiet one on Wednesday, got it going again. 11 and 5, 4 steals and 3 blocks. He's a must-own waiver wire pickup to me. And Zach Randolph played 26 minutes off the bench and went 7 and 8. Very hard to own him in 12-team leagues. I can understand holding, but I don't think that there's... He's got a very short leash, in my opinion. Mike Conley, 20 points in his 35 minutes, and Marc Gasol went 16 and 8 with 3 steals in 34 minutes. Courtney Lee played 29 in this one, and he'd been up 35-plus in all the games with Tony Allen out. He just wasn't feeling it in this game. He's a very much a borderline 12-team league player, as is Jeff Green, who played 35 minutes for 2 points and 7 rebounds and 3 assists. He missed all 7 of his field goal attempts, Green. Both of those guys are probably a 14-team league must and a 12-team maybe, whereas Matt Barnes is a 12-team must. Tony Allen doesn't look like he's going to be back in the next game or two, so we're probably going to see more minutes from Barnes and Lee and Jeff Green taking up probably more minutes than they actually deserve. Onto the Mavericks, Dirk had 20 points in his 28 minutes, Darren Williams 14 and 6, and Zaza Pachulia grabbed 18 rebounds in his 29 minutes. A bit of a quieter one from Ray Felton. He dropped from 31 minutes down to 28, and that's to do with Parsons getting the extra run. Still 28 minutes is good. 8 points, 2 threes, 6 assists is still fantasy useful, so I'm still owning Ray Felton for the time being, but that might change pretty quickly. Wes Matthews also was terrible. 2 points in 29 minutes, 3 assists, and 2 steals. Missed all 4 of his field goal attempts, and he's been extremely streaky this year. We also saw JaVale McGee play 18 minutes here, reducing Dwight Powell to 9. 10 and 5 for McGee with 3 blocks. That is great, but it's just going to be way too sporadic to own in anything outside of like a 20-team league, I would say. The Denver Nuggets and the Utah Jazz are up next. No Emmanuel Mudiay, so Jameer Nelson got the start, 15, 5, and 6 with a triple one. Mudiay looks like he's going to be back soon, so Nelson's value is going to go down to 14 team leagues. Gary Harris with a solid triple one as well, 12 points. And the center position. It's a mess, but it's a good mess. 27 minutes for Joffrey Lavernier, 12 and 13 with two threes. That's really good. But the last game, Nikola Jokic had played more minutes and outperformed him, but he was still good here in 21 minutes as well. 7 points and 10 rebounds with a steal. The problem is that Yusuf Nurkic is going to be back in the next 2 weeks probably, and he's going to start taking minutes off these guys. You could say that you could own Jokic now. You could own Lavernier, but how do you know which day which one of them is going to play more minutes? The answer is you don't. You can take a guess. I can't tell you who's going to be the best value for now. It changes basically every single day, but in 2 weeks' time, it's probably not going to be a discussion we're going to need to have. Will Barton only played 23 minutes in this game, but was still productive. 16, 3, and 2 with a 3 and a steal. But like Kent Bazemore, his shooting dropped down to sort of more like career numbers. 5 of 13 in this one. And that's the one drawback with Will Barton, is that he's shooting well above career numbers, but also that in that bench role, he might play 30 minutes for 4 games straight and then play 20 minutes. And he does have that risk. And we've seen Mike Malone do that quite a few times this season. Danilo Gallinari struggled, 11 points in his 34 minutes, and Kenneth Faried was putrid, 8-7, no other stats, 4 of 11 shooting, and missed both his free throws. If you don't know my thoughts on Kenneth Faried by now, he sucks. The Utah Jazz, Gordon Hayward, 26, 5, and 4 with 4 triples, while Rodney Hood had that knee issue but played 33 minutes for Hood, 12, 4, and 5, so good nights from them. Quinn Snyder is still tinkering with his starting lineup. Alec Burks back out of the starting lineup, Harl Netto back in, and Jeff Withey out of the starting lineup, Trey Lyles back in. Burks only played 17 minutes here and had 8 points. He's still a guy that I want to own in 12-team leagues, no matter if he's starting or coming off the bench, but he's getting a bit jerked around at the moment. I don't really like what Snyder's doing here with this setup. Trey Burke had 13 points in 23 minutes with a couple of assists, probably more of a 14-team league guy at this point. And Trey Lyles got the start, played 26 minutes and had 6-6. That's not enticing. Trevor Booker played 25 off the bench and had 12-6 with 2 steals and a 3. So that is 12-team relevant. It's not for everybody. It's for certain situations, but I'd much rather have Trevor Booker over Trey Lyles. The New Orleans Pelicans and the Phoenix Suns. Anthony Davis, 16 and 12, 2 steals and 3 blocks. Good night from him. The scoring, obviously, not quite there, but the other numbers are fairly impressive. Tyreek Evans slowed down a little bit by foul trouble. 24 minutes for him, 12 and 4 with 2 steals and a block, while Eric Gordon went 15 points with 2 steals in his 29 minutes. Drew Holiday played 27, so still getting a nice run off the bench. 14, 2 and 4, and like Chandler Parsons, he's a clear must-own player. Ryan Anderson, oddly, played just 21 minutes, had 3 points. That is a real stinker after massive, massive games in the last couple. Don't really understand what the situation is there with him. Omer Asik got the start, played 21 minutes, 4-6, but we don't really care too much about him. What I do care is I keep seeing Norris Cole play minutes and be terrible. 24 minutes for Norris Cole, 4 points, 2 rebounds, and an assist. Yeah, I feel like he's completely fooled the NBA for 3 seasons or 4 seasons. He's just not worth playing. I'm never going to understand the appeal of Norris Cole. Now, the Phoenix Suns. It's time for me to revisit one of my most hated NBA topics. Showcasing for a trade. Markieff Morris hadn't played since the 7th of December, but in this game against a team that he'd been rumored to be traded to in exchange for Ryan Anderson, he got 8 minutes in the first half. He played 17 minutes. And you hear the reports, oh, they're probably showcasing him for a trade. If you're Dell Demps, if you're Elvin Gentry, and you don't know who Markieff Morris is, get a new job. If you make a decision to acquire a player by trade based on one game that he plays against you, get another job. But it happens. Teams wouldn't do it if it didn't happen. It is batshit insane to me that... No, you know what? It's not. Because I know how a lot of people work. I know how society works. Wave something in someone's face. Oh, look at this. Shiny. Look at this. It's Markieff Morris. Oh my God, he played. Let's get him. Let's trade for him. What are you doing? You know who Markieff Morris is. And this is not saying Markieff Morris is a bad player. If you can get him for a good deal, I'm all for doing it because I think that he's much better than he's shown this season. I think he is a real, a decent player. But if you need to see him showcased, and you can't see me because I'm not on the screen at the moment, I'm, Dr. Evil air quoting, showcased. If you need to see him showcased, what are you doing in this job? I know who Markieff Morris is. You know who Markieff Morris is. You know what he's done on the court for 5 years. You know what he's allegedly done off the court for 5 years. Does 48 minutes against your team change all of that? If he didn't play in this game, would New Orleans go, we were going to trade you, Anthony Davis, but because he didn't play against us, sorry, deal's off. If the NBA works like that, they need to have a good hard look at themselves because it makes zero sense to me. Zero. And it's going to continue to happen because who knows. Anyway, the second part of my discussion on this is stashing players in fantasy leagues. Get lots of questions. Should I go and add Markieff Morris? Should I stash Markieff Morris in case a trade comes? Two things. Who knows when? You could go and add Markieff Morris now and go, yeah, trade's going to come. You could have done that at the start of December and held him, and he hasn't played a minute until now. And you've just cost you've got a zero in your roster for 3 weeks. And you've missed the opportunity. So not only have you had zeros, but you've got an opportunity cost of not being able to pick up someone else off the waiver wire. It might have been someone like Lou Williams who's gotten hot recently. It might have been reacquiring Gorgui Dieng. It may have been somebody else that I can't put my finger on. Reacquiring Kent Bazemore after he returned from injury. You don't know if Markieff Morris will get traded. You don't know when Markieff Morris will get traded. You don't know who Markieff Morris will get traded to and how they'll use him. There's way too many uncertain factors in that. Now, in a rotisserie league or a weekly lineup league where you can just go, yep, you're locked on the bench and your zeros don't hurt me, fine, whatever, do it. If you're in a 16-team league, I'm okay with doing it. But in a standard league, him, Terrence Jones, can't think of the other, hopefully no one's stashing Caron Butler because he's going to get traded, but Jones, Morris, Clint Capella, Capella should be owned anyway, but Jones and Morris shouldn't be, and I'm sure as hell not owning them and stashing them, hoping for a trade. People were doing that with Reggie Jackson last year, from December. And yes, he got traded in February, and yes, he was awesome, but he had 3 months of zeros with him. And that's, in the end, it probably ended up costing you a fair few wins. And we don't know where Morris goes. He might go to Houston and be stuck behind Monta Ellis and Capella anyway and play 15 minutes a night. Same as Ty Lawson. He's another one. We're hearing rumblings of him getting traded, him being suspended now as well. But he could go somewhere and play exactly the same role in minutes. And it might take 3 months to happen. I don't see any trades happening in the next 3 weeks. 4 weeks. I see two trades happening probably in the next 6 weeks, would be my guess. It just doesn't happen until we get to February. You'll get one in the next 3 weeks. You might get two, but that's about it. I can't see it being, just trading like crazy even before the deadline. And to me, I'm not a fan of that stashing strategy. Anyway, on to the rest of the Suns. I told you Alex Len was good. 29 minutes for Len, 19 and 13. He hit a three. He had two steals and a block. Tyson Chandler is done. 19 minutes for him as a starter. Now, Len might continue to play off the bench, and they might split minutes. It's the wrong thing, in my opinion, that they split minutes. Len should get the more run. And I said this a couple of weeks ago, that yes, they signed a big deal, Chandler to a big deal, and that was, they did it for whatever, but wasn't the worst contract given out to a center in the offseason. That went to the guy on the opposite side, Omer Asik, and he's been benched and moved back and forward already. Chandler's old, he's struggling, he's dealing with an injury. Len is playing brilliantly. I think the Suns have to run with Len. He has to be owned everywhere. He's a really good fantasy player, really good. There's the situation where that might not work out, but everything's pointing in that right direction. John Lua's also a must-own, 12 and 10 for him in 27 minutes. The appearance of Markieff Morris didn't hurt Lua. It did hurt Mirza Talibovic, who played just 3 minutes, and that's not great because he'd been pretty red hot. Wasn't a must-own guy there by any stretch. Brandon Knight had 10 points in 41 minutes. He struggled, whereas Eric Bledsoe went 29-4-9 with two steals in his 35. TJ Warren also played 28 versus PJ Tucker's 24 minutes. The last game of the night, the Milwaukee Bucks and the Golden State Warriors. Speaking of stupid coaching, Greg Monroe returned. That's not stupid coaching. It's good to have him back. But when you say he's going to be out a week and he misses two games, or at least a week, with an MCL sprain, something doesn't seem right where a guy can have an MCL. It must have been the smallest of smallest sprains for him to be back that quickly. He played 27 minutes here, 10, 13, and 7 with two steals and a block. But Jason Kidd then said, John Henson, nah, you can play 2 minutes. Why does he hate John Henson? Someone here, are they a Bucks supporter? Does anyone know anything about why this is happening? I can't get a straight answer at anyone. Why does he hate John Henson? John Henson puts up really good fantasy stats, but that's not the only one. I think he's an awesome rim protector. He shouldn't be playing less minutes than Miles Plumlee and Johnny O'Brien. Now, Plumlee was good here, 13 and 7 with three blocks, but if this is another one of those stupid-ass showcasing for a trades, I'm going to be pissed. But it's Jason Kidd, so dumb shit happens all the time. The next thing that Jason Kidd did is he reinserted Giannis Antetokounmpo back into the starting lineup. Don't go out there and say, we're putting Giannis onto the bench because we want to really see how he can integrate with the bench unit and increase his scoring and run that bench unit. Don't do it for one game. What do you see in one game? It's like saying, I want to see what we got from Tyler Ennis, so we're going to sit Jared Bayless and do it for one game. It just reeks of Jason Kidd being a dickhead to me. Like it reeks of that. I'm glad they got beaten after having a 16-point lead. Stop being stupid. And this is not fantasy-based. Stop making dumb decisions. What are you gaining from one game of Giannis playing off the bench? Do it Scott Skiles style. Put Giannis on the bench for 10 games and see what happens. If that's really what you want to do. Or just don't talk shit. Pretty straightforward. Giannis was good though, 26-4 with a block in his 36 minutes. Michael Carter-Williams remained in the starting lineup, 39 minutes for him, 24-5-4 with a 1-1. Clearly has to be owned everywhere, but he's always susceptible to whatever Kidd is going to do. OJ Mayo moved back to the bench and played 22 minutes, 12-3-4, so still productive in that bench minutes. So if I did own him, and I do, I'm holding to see how this plays out. Does he go back to 28 minutes? Does he continue in a 20-minute role? Because if he's in a 20-minute role, I'm not going to want to hold on for too long. But it's Jason Kidd. One game sample size is apparently enough for him to see everything he needs to see. So let's just wait and see how this all rolls together. Chris Middleton had 16 points with 4 assists and 2 steals, while Jabari Parker played 31 minutes and scored 14 points. On to the Warriors. Steph, 26-10-9 with 2 steals and 2 threes. Klay Thompson went 27-3-2 with 3 blocks. And his block numbers are incredible at the moment for a shooting guard, really buoying his value. And Draymond Green almost triple-doubled too. 21-9-8. We almost had two guys get triple-doubles with 20-plus points. We didn't have any, but we almost did. Now, Andrew Bogut lasted just 5 minutes with back spasm. So Festus Ezeli played 27 minutes, 14-10 with 2 steals. If you're looking for a short-term guy, maybe one or two games, Ezeli is probably worth the look. But Bogut, I don't think is going to be a long-term situation of him missing time. And then Ezeli goes back to playing 18 to 20 minutes. That's it. We are done for that portion of the podcast. It is time for me to have a drink because you can't see my face, but maybe when I come back from the break, you'll see that I'm absolutely drowning in sweat due to the weather here. I'll be back in a minute. We've got a new song for the break, which I'll play for you now. This is the part with just the guitar, while we wait on the bass and drums. I'll sing of love and you from afar. Well, here they come in now. You know, you can't. back, and that was, the song was called Formula Rock Song Number 1, and the band is called Joe Hero. They are from North Carolina, I believe, and listeners to the podcast, Scott, listener to the podcast, who is in the band, sent me the email. Yeah, when I sent out a call a few months back looking for some bands who wanted to have their music featured in the show. So that band is Joe Hero. You can find their music at reverbnation.com/Joe Hero. And that song is called Formula Rock Song. So thank you, Scott, and thank you to Joe Hero. All right, guys, let's talk daily fantasy. Now, there's 5 games on Saturday. The first one of those is the Los Angeles Lakers and the Oklahoma City Thunder. The Thunder is favored by 15.5 points. That is big. That's massive. 208.5 is the total. I still like guys like Russell Westbrook in this one at 10,500. His salary has dropped. This could be a three-quarter triple-double for Russell Westbrook. I like using him here, especially on this sort of compressed slate as well. Kevin Durant has dropped down to 10,002. Now, his numbers haven't been as good of late, averaging under 40 points in the last 3 games. But if you look over his last 5, his minimum score is 36. So that's a pretty decent floor. And this is not a bad matchup. It's a great matchup going up against the Lakers. Dion Waiters is not a bad tournament option at 4,200. Again, Lakers-induced boost. And Steven Adams at 4,000 has had some relatively big games lately, only giving you about 18 points to 19 points a game, but at 4,000, that's not too far off where you want to be. As for the Lakers, guys, Lou Williams is probably the best value play there. At 5,200, he's giving you 25 a game. It's exactly what you need from him. Kobe Bryant's 6,900, but he's averaging 39 points over the last 3. He's playing a lot better. I hate using Kobe here. Now, the Thunder, with Andre Robertson at shooting guard, do shut down shooting guards pretty decently, so there is a risk there, but don't really hate using Kobe here. As for guys like D'Angelo Russell and Jordan Clarkson, they're both at very similar salaries, 55 for Russell and 56 for Jordan Clarkson. I don't think that either of them are in a great spot here. Clarkson's been more consistent, but Russell's got the higher upside at the moment. So I guess it depends if you're looking at cash or if you're looking at a GPP situation. 6,400 for Serge Ibaka is not something that I hate. I think that's a solid price. He put up 36 in the last game. I reckon he's not a bad guy to have a look at as well. And Julius Randle is strictly a tournament play for me because he's in the Byron Scott, I'm an idiot, bench role. He popped up 34 in the last game in 23 minutes. He's giving you 28 in 24 minutes. But everything sort of has to go right in those limited minutes for him to be able to return that value. Not much else I really love from this game. The next game is Charlotte and Washington. There is no spread released for that one yet. We do need to check the status of Nick Batum for Charlotte and Otto Porter for Washington. Nene is most likely out again. We can basically consider him out for every game. Jeremy Lin at 5,100 gets a massive boost if Batum is out again. Even if Batum plays, Lin had been getting solid minutes before that. It's an easier matchup against the Wizards, so I don't hate using Lin, but he's not a must roster player like he would be if Batum was out. Now, Batum is also in a solid spot if he plays at $7,000. His salary has come down a bit. This is a prime opportunity for him to pop 35 points on the board. The Wizards guys, Ramon Sessions, Gary Neal, they're going to be getting the bulk of the Bradley Beal minutes. Sessions at 4,000 is averaging 21 points over the last 3. That's not terrible, and he does have that extra ability to get those assists, which can give you those extra points, so not a bad guy to have a look at there. While Marcin Gortat at 6,600 is giving you over 32 in his last 3, and at 6,600, that's almost where it needs to be at. Otto Porter is not someone I want to take a risk on. Frank Kaminsky at 3,900. He's getting decent minutes, but he's not transitioning it into big enough fantasy points, so I don't think I want to go there, nor do I really want to use too much of Cody Zeller here. John Wall at 9,800. That hot streak has cooled off a little bit for him, but at 9,800, less than 10,000, can he give you 45 points? I reckon you've got a pretty decent chance of it. He's averaging 45 across his last 5. I'm okay with using John Wall. I'm not in love with it, but I can sort of get behind it. Kemba Walker at 8,100, that feels a little bit expensive to me, although the Wizards are allowing point guards to put up some pretty decent numbers, and he did have 48 in the last game. So he's someone to pay attention to, but I'd much rather him at 7,600, something around that sort of mark. Jeremy Lamb is tournaments only because his minutes have been definitely reduced lately. And the Jared Dudley, Chris Humphreys situation at power forward, they're both 3600. You might want to look at them both in a tournament, but I just feel that both they're probably going to cancel each other out. The next game, the Chicago Bulls and the New York Knicks. I do not know what to expect from the Bulls here. I don't know what Hoiberg is going to do after these guys playing 50 minutes a pop. We really need to sit back and see what happens with guys like Pau Gasol. Because if he is out, we're going to see more Mirotić. We're going to see some more Joakim Noah as well. And then they become guys we need to have a look at. As for the Knicks, or as for the Bulls, I imagine that Butler's going to get a reduction. Rose will play less minutes. I think it's going to be really hard to roster a lot of these Chicago guys in DFS situations. On to the Knicks. Kristaps
percentages
at 6,400. He's not quite doing enough. He's giving you 20 points a game, which is okay, but you want him to do more. I reckon this is going to be a big game for him against a tired Bulls team who front court does allow some decent production. I think this is a good spot for him. And even Robin Lopez at 3,700, who's been not great, but we saw what Drummond did to the front court. They're tired. Second half of a back-to-back on the road. Is it on the road? Let me double-check that. Yes, on the road. Yeah, if he gets 22 points, yep, value's done. If he gets 25 points, you're absolutely laughing. So there's value in him. And Carmelo Anthony at 8,700 has been putting up some pretty good numbers. A bit quiet today, but at sixes induced, that doesn't concern me. I think this could be a spot for him to put up some really big numbers as well. Kylo Quinn has averaged over 20 points in his last three. He's getting the minutes back. We know he's a good fantasy producer and he's less than 4,000. That's a nice tournament play, I think. And Jimmy Butler, as I said, the minutes could be right down here. The Knicks do limit opposition shooting guards. So 8,300, tied, possible minutes limit or minute reduction. It's a brave man. Same goes with Pau Gasol at 8,400. You're paying up for a guy that, even if they say he is going to play, maybe he only plays 25 minutes. Maybe he plays 20 minutes. Who knows what they do with him, but it doesn't appear like it's going to be, let's get Pau out there for 32 minutes or anything along those lines. So Mirotić is the guy that should see a bit of an uptick, and Joakim Noah and Doug McDermott possibly as well. Indiana and Memphis is the next game up. Tony Allen is doubtful, unlikely he's going to play, so we should see more Jeff Green, Courtney Lee minutes as well. Matt Barnes is the best player though at 4,500. I really like getting him out there, averaging 25 across the last three. Jeff Green is more hit and miss at same price as Matt Barnes. You can look at him in a tournament, but I still don't even think he's got the same upside as what Barnes does. I like Conley at 6,100. I like Gasol at 7,600. And I do like Courtney Lee at 4,200. Yes, he had a stinker here, but the Pacers do allow shooting guards to put up good numbers. He's averaging 22.7, and at 4,200, not a bad guy to have a look at. Not much else really gets me too excited here. Paul George at 9,600 is just, he's averaging less than 30 in his last five games, not getting it done. Now, the Grizzlies defense is definitely nowhere near what it was before, so don't think this is an automatic, oh, Grizzlies are playing, guys are going to get locked down. Maybe George gets it going, so you can think about him there, but I don't really think, unless you've got a lot of other cheap options in your lineup and you just go, okay, I've got 9,600 left, then I'll get Paul George and he'll give me my 35 with 50-point upside. That's sort of where I'm looking at him in this one. George Hill just hasn't been getting it done at all lately at 5,700. That's too expensive. Monte Ellis at 6,000. I don't want to pay up for that, nor do I want to spend 6,400 on Zach Randolph. CJ Miles is an interesting one at 5,400. He's been giving us almost 28 a game across the last three. A pretty solid matchup here against Memphis. I'm okay with using him at 4,600. And even Jordan Hill in a tournament at 4,600, he's been rock solid with what he's giving us lately, averaging 23 across the last five games. He did have a 37-point game in there. I reckon he's right to go at 4,600. He's going to return some pretty good value most times. There'll be a couple of times when it doesn't happen, but he's been rock solid at that number for that salary. The last game of the night is the Los Angeles Clippers and the Houston Rockets. Okay, so we're going up against the Rockets defense. So Blake Griffin at 9,200, DeAndre Jordan at 7,400, both become really, really good options. We know that the Houston front court just boosts guys' abilities to put up numbers, so they're guys to pay attention to. Patrick Beverley at 4,300, if he gives you 23 points, which is exactly what you're doing, that's plenty. That's exactly what he needs to do. Chris Paul going up against Patrick Beverley. He's been in pretty good form, Paul, but Patrick Beverley is a bit of a different kettle of fish, so I'm not all that enticed with Paul, although there is a little bit of intrigue with him at 8,500. Dwight Howard at 7,500. No, thank you. Clint Capella at 5,000. I definitely like his upside. He's averaging 27.4. The minutes were definitely his over Terrence Jones and Donatas Motiejunas in the last game. I like him. I like Trevor Ariza at 5,700. And James Harden at 10,700. Feels like a 45-point lock in this game. Not much else to really... like. Motiejunas we're not using. Terrence Jones we're not using. The Clippers bench, please. Even the Clippers bench. Even the Clippers don't use the Clippers bench. So I'm not going to be looking at them in daily fantasy. Let's bring up the plays of the day. At point guard, Patrick Beverley, 4,300. Mike Conley, 6,100. And Ross Westbrook, 10,500. Shooting guards, we got Courtney Lee, 4,200. Lou Williams, 5,200. And James Harden, apparently according to my graphic here, $10.70. $10,700 for James Harden. Matt Barnes, 4,500. Trevor Ariza, 5,700 at small forward. And Kevin Durant at the flat, 10,000. Power forwards, Clint Capella, 5,000. Serge Ibaka, 6,400. And Blake Griffin at 9,200 rounds them out. At center, Robin Lopez, 3,700. That's so cheap. DeAndre Jordan, 7,400. And Marc Gasol at 7,600. That brings us to the end of today's show, guys. Make sure you're following me on Twitter, RedRock_Bball, and BasketballMonster at BaskMonster. And make sure you're checking out BasketballMonster.com. There is a ton of information over there for daily fantasy and seasonal fantasy leagues. And, of course, HardwoodParoxysm.com. There's heaps of talented riders over there. And the Hardwood Paroxysm family, Nylon Calculus, Upside and Motor. There's a lot of great sites over there, a lot of great riding. So make sure you're... reading those things, and if you like something you read, tweet it out. The authors always love seeing their work getting out to as many people as possible. Do me a favor if you can and subscribe to the podcast on iTunes and leave a beautiful review. I love them. You know that. It gives you sponsorship rights for the podcast for a day. And if you're in Australia, make sure you're checking out moneyball.com.au for all your daily fantasy sports action. We are done here, guys. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya.